This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 505, recorded on Tuesday, July 11th, 2017. I'm Martin Spriggs, and you've joined a show about technology and ministry, and we're so happy that you did. When I say we, I mean me, and of course, my podcasting partner and buddy, Sally Draper from New Ulm, Minnesota. Hi, Sally. How are you?
I am just great, Martin. Nice to be joining you this week, and I think we're reaching about the midpoint of summer already. It seems to be flying by.
A little bit of trivia for you, Wells Tech trivia. You know what we were doing 2 years ago today?
I actually do, because some pictures came up. We were at Wells Tech Conference 2015, and I don't know if it was the last day of the conference. Oh, there you are, presenting. There you go.
That's the only reason I know is my Facebook app reminded me that, hey, this is what you were doing. One of those memory things pops up, which are kind of cool. This is what you were doing 2 years ago today. So,
yep, that was you maybe leading devotion or kicking it off the first night, one or the other. I remember you being on
stage.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, it was so much younger.
Back in the day.
That was fun times, and that led to a lot of different things. You know, some new acquaintances, some, a whole Facebook page, lots of different stuff. But no conference this summer. In fact, no conference next summer. 2 years from now, we're looking forward to a leadership/Wells Tech conference. And I'm really looking forward to that, but a lot of planning between now and then. But we do have something to share this summer. We've been going along each week talking about and focusing on a ministry resource. So we kind of trade back and forth. 1 week I'll write up a blog post and maybe sometimes do a short video, then you. And hopefully we've provided some good stuff for our listeners along the way. And I am up this week, and let me actually pull the right slide up here. Just 1 second.
I got too many.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's share an application window. That's what I want.
Awesome.
And there we go. I'm talking all about cloud storage as a ministry resource. And this kind of struck me as I was doing a lot of work the last month with online images and sharing documents, planning documents, spreadsheets, all in the name of wedding planning and sharing drafts of service folders and tent cards for its table placements, and cloud storage really came in handy for a lot of different reasons, the ability to collaborate, et cetera, et cetera. So I thought it would be a nice ministry resource to share. I know not everybody is on the cloud storage bandwagon, but I thought I would kind of take a realistic look at what the state is of cloud storage these days, both the benefits and what I call the gotchas. So I wrote up a little blog post and kind of walk through each of the benefits and gotchas, and maybe you can share your experiences as well, Sally. I think one of the biggest benefits that I believe cloud storage brings to the table is the ability to have your files wherever you are. A lot of us have different devices that we use. Some of us have work computers and home computers. Sometimes we have tablets, smartphones, and often the files that we need to be shared across all those devices. And cloud storage, all the major vendors do that. And when we talk about cloud storage, we're talking about those sites that we can place files on, like Google. Theirs is Google Drive, Microsoft OneDrive, Apple iCloud, Dropbox, Box.com. Those are kind of the big heavy hitters that most people have heard of. But obviously one of the benefits of being a heavy hitter is you have the apps that go along with that. So to view this stuff on, you know, let's say an iPad or an iPhone, you have to have the app to do that. And all of these vendors do that and do it pretty well. I've been pretty happy with how the implementation of how they synchronize across devices.
You know, Martin, I serve on the board of the local resale shop, Treasure House, that benefits Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School and other Wells and Ells organizations. And we have a Google Apps domain on our website, so we can use Google Apps and share things. And it never fails that when I'm not prepared, in some circumstance, someone will ask me a question, and I won't have my computer with me, or I won't be in the right place to look it up on paper or whatever it is. But I almost always can pull out my phone and get to what I need. And that's because of using Google Drive consistently to store all our documents. You know, it's right. Not just what we talked about last month. We may have talked about this 4 months ago or 8 months ago or whatever. And
or this time last year or
exactly.
2 years ago.
Yeah. And it's not right there at my fingertips necessarily, but then again it is. And it's just a really powerful thing to have that much power in your pocket or in your purse to be able to access that stuff.
Yeah. One of the benefits I didn't list here, and you reminded me of it, is most of these services have just fantastic searching. I mentioned that in the little video that I did at the end of the blog post here, but with all the documents that we've collected, and almost every document we use now starts in digital format. So you've got a ton of them. And if you're relying on some kind of organizational schema, that sometimes fails you. So the ability to search on a particular term, file name, you know, maybe even the year or month that you created it, that's a pretty powerful thing. And that's what these cloud services allow you to do as well. So benefit number two, I felt, was the ability to version files. So almost all of these offer the ability to save copies of the same file over time. So as a document gets collaborated on or developed over time or revised, these cloud services offer you the ability to kind of go back in time and see what it looked like a month ago or a year ago. And that's important, especially with collaboration. You've got multiple people working on a document. But even if you are the only one working on it, sometimes things go wrong and you need to go back into history and pull out the last known good version to continue working on or share or something like that.
You made me laugh because I was thinking sometimes your boss will say, no, I like it the way it was before. And you'll have to put it back the way it was before. Yeah, imagine that.
I never do that.
Yeah.
Benefit number three, cloud services mean you may not have to spend the extra money on these huge hard disks. We just talked about the proliferation of documents, and that's what knowledge workers like us and call workers do all the time. We're creating documents, revising documents. The documents are getting bigger and bigger. We're including images and videos and PowerPoints and keynotes and whatever. And that in olden days would mean, well, we got to buy bigger hard drives. Even though the prices of those things are coming down, you really don't have to have these larger drives to support all that, because you can push this stuff to the cloud. And maybe there's stuff that you don't need around, you know, at your fingertip each and every day. You can push that off to the cloud and not have to worry about having it all together on one hard drive. And yeah, there's the computers that we have now have pretty large space to begin with, but with SSDs and, you know, some of the faster storage, that can add up to some extra money when you're maybe looking to outfit a new laptop, and you can get by with maybe, you know, 512 or 256 gigs of memory versus, well, I need 2 terabytes or 10 terabytes or whatever.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times, how good that new laptop feeling is, or that new computer feeling is, when you get it and you go, oh my goodness, I could never fill up this much storage. You know, it's 10 times more than I've ever had. And then all of a sudden you're filling it up.
You install Office, and then you install Photoshop, or you install this or that. You're creating all these documents, and you got all your photos, and et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, absolutely. Benefit number four, backups. I see a typo in my blog post is mentioned. Well, no, it isn't a typo. It's mentioned number three. Backups are done for you. So I talk a little bit about the benefit of that. I want to be clear because this is one of my gotchas. Don't think of these as backup solutions, but that is a benefit because, you know, these files that are important to you are being backed up by some major players, you know, people who know about backup more so than we do. So Microsoft, Google, Apple, they have redundant server farms. So if something goes horribly wrong, it's very likely that you'll get your files back. If you're kind of on your own doing this yourself and you lose a hard drive or whatever, or you've forgotten to back up recently, you're in a little bit more trouble. So there is a benefit to storing these online, kind of a belt and suspenders approach where you may have a backup, but they're also saving a backup for you. So I think that is a benefit because immediately when you save it, they have likely copied it someplace else, which is the good news.
Backups of synchronized files.
That's right.
Wow.
Got that?
Yeah.
Finally, the last benefit I noted here, and there are more, of course, is the cost of cloud storage is getting cheaper. I know I pay Google $2 a month for 100 gigabytes of data, which I have not used yet. And this is mostly for personal stuff. But all my pictures, all my documents, et cetera, are all on there, and I put a link here in the blog post of the rundown of all the major providers and their prices, and they're all fairly competitive. If you want to go maybe even to like a terabyte of online storage, that may cost you $9-$10 a month, but that's pretty inexpensive compared to the olden days when you were having to buy, you know, redundant hard drives and remember to do it. And this is pretty cheap to keep the things that are important to you available to you. So,
definitely. I think if you check out the article, you'll see that Google is the cheapest at that 100 gigabyte price point, at least the last time that they updated this article it was. So, and 100 gigabytes is quite a bit of storage. So they give you, 15, 17 gig for free. And, you know, I've been using Google for a long time. I've yet to fill that up. So if you went with 100 gig a month for a monthly price, that's $12 a year. Not bad for that much storage.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm using only about 30 gigs of that. 20 gigs is photos. Mm-hmm. So I keep the original raw file, and so I like to be able to go back to those. It's not all peaches and cream, though, so there are gotchas when you're talking about cloud storage. You have to remember, number one, that someone else is holding onto your files, so there is a security aspect of it. They are major players, but then there are some lesser players, too, and you can get some good storage prices there. But, you know, just a word of caution, choose your service wisely. You don't want that to pick a horse that is not going to be there next year, and then you've got some real problems. You got to get all your stuff off of there if you can, etc. So you don't want to be moving stuff around, so make a wise choice. I'd say the ones that we've mentioned have been around for quite some time. It's a pretty mature industry. They may change names, and, you know, the interfaces may change, etc., but by and large, all the players here have been around for a good long time at this point. Number two gotcha is you need to be on the internet. So the cloud is something that does not rest on a little wire connected to your computer anymore. It's way out there in the internet somewhere. So if you have inconsistent access to the internet or the cloud, and your bandwidth is maybe a little sketchy sometimes, or maybe it's not very fast, that may be a negative in a check mark in the negative column if you're considering cloud storage. Now, we've talked about synchronization and those kinds of things, and that can help you so that if your internet is down or you're away from the internet, you do have a local copy. But by and large, I would probably discourage somebody from using cloud storage if they're really challenged by bandwidth or inconsistent internet.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Number three gotcha is, and I mentioned this in the benefits, is don't think of these cloud storage providers as backup replacements. they really aren't. A backup would be something that you could go, you know, infinitely back in time and pull out something that you deleted, you know, yesterday or last month or last year, and you just want to pull up a clean copy of a backup. These are synchronization tools by and large. So if you delete something on cloud storage, it's probably going to delete the synced copy wherever that lives. So we've talked about backup solutions before, Backblaze, Carbonite, and they just kind of hum along in the background. You pay the provider. I think Backblaze is about $50 a year, something like that, for unlimited storage. It just hums along in the background, and anytime you add a file, change a file, delete a file, you can always go back to Backblaze, for instance, or Carbonite, and get your stuff back. Not necessarily true with cloud storage providers, although they do have trash that you can go in and pull it out, but those aren't forever. I think Google's Gmail keeps it around for a certain period of time, and then it's gone or cleans it out, etc. I think almost all of them do that because they don't have unlimited space. So just keep that in mind, that they serve different purposes. So that's kind of my little spiel on cloud storage. Sally, you obviously use OneDrive for business like I do. Do you use something different or anything else for personal stuff?
Yeah, we are pretty invested in Google Drive like you, but we haven't gotten to the point of paying for extra storage. Okay. We really like the fact that we can share easily with family members, collaborate, that kind of thing. I was thinking about a prior church school setting that I was in where they had not just hard drive space, but a dedicated server for collaboration in that setting. And really with the collaborative nature of Drive and other tools like that, you could actually eliminate a whole machine in the process.
And so that's, you know, it can save some money. It certainly saves time and
maintenance.
Consternation, I think. Our school is dealing with that right now, trying to get people off of that server, which is kind of a challenge, you know, to get people off of something they've used and relied on. And they don't totally trust some of these, and sometimes that trust is well founded, because synchronization is still one of those evolving technologies. We know from using OneDrive that it's not always foolproof. So, you know, we'll get there eventually. But one thing that I did mention in the video. The video, by the way, talks about Google Drive and kind of the top five reasons top five features I really count on it. One of those is a new feature called, and I think we mentioned this on the podcast, Google Team. Is it called Team Drive?
Team Drive,
something like that. Google Teams, which has solved a problem for a lot of G Suite users, because Google Drive out of the box makes one file per owner, or one owner per file, however you want to think of it. So every file needs one owner. You can share it, but at the end of the day, it's going to go back to that owner who has control of it. You can share ownership and those kinds of things, but it's very different than a file server where you can put a drive up there and give everybody access to the drive, and they all have kind of equal access and can upload, change, delete, whatever. That's what the Teams function does for Google Drive now, where you can kind of create a team folder, and everybody can, anybody that you give permission can go in there and contribute and add stuff and delete stuff. So it's kind of a return to the file server model, and that's been pretty popular, I understand. So,
yeah, good stuff.
So if you're interested in cloud storage, want to read through the article, watch the demo of my top five favorite Google Drive features, go to wellstech.wells.net and take a look at the article. We'll have or the blog post, we'll have a link in the show notes. All right, Sally, let's move along. Our picks of the week.
Sure, I think I'll take my turn at sharing Windows. And I took a little trip down memory lane the other day. I was thinking about back in the day when I did computer lab time with the students at St. John's Lutheran in Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. And I had kids from grades K through 8, and especially my K through two, early readers, pre-readers, I really struggled with having them work with things online. And so over time, I eventually built this web page. I called it the Wacky Wonderful Websites. I had a shortcut URL, set it as their homepage on the computers in the computer lab we were using. And I went with more visual things. I had a lot of images and things that indicated to them what they were going to get. So when they would drill down, I could say, click on the picture of Curious George or whatever, and that would get them to the website without them having to type out the full URL to get to the website. But it's been a while since I've maintained the site. I love it that the site's still out there, and there are some really good things that still exist, some really good links here and things that I often come back and look up because I remember them being here and stuff. Visited recently with parents of little preschoolers and toddlers, and my friends Tom and Rachel Rosenau, who live over in Bloomer, Wisconsin, and they have four youngsters. I guess their oldest is going into first grade now, and they mentioned to me that I would probably enjoy a PBS series that's been out for a year or so called Peg Plus Cat. Have you heard about Peg Plus Cat, Martin?
I can't say that I have. It looks
once you get past those preschool days, you don't tend to watch morning PBS shows anymore. And I wasn't familiar with Peg Plus Cat, but if I were still maintaining my Wacky Wonderful Websites page for K through 2 especially, this would be a great site to send them. And it has games and videos, adventures, and it makes noise as well when you mouse over things. The kicker is that it's all math-based. If you notice the image that I have here on the screen, the clouds are actually infinity symbols. And it's like a graph paper behind. And apparently that's the way the whole show is done, with math really interlaced throughout the show and very high quality. Tom and Rachel both recommended it highly and said the mathy in me would definitely enjoy it. So this is just a recommendation for teachers, parents out there with preschool-aged children or early readers, they might enjoy the Peg Plus Cat site and the different games and videos that are available here. So check it out, and I'll have a link in the show notes. It's pbskids.org/peg.
I have to share this with my daughter. I've got a grandson who's 3 years old, and you're suggesting this is 3 to 6 year old mm-hmm. specific? That sounds like he'd be right up his alley. So
yeah, turn him into a little mathy.
Awesome. Nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all.
All right, my pick. I'll actually bring up my phone here if I can. Where is what I'm looking for?
Way
to
back
my home
in history.
Screen. Google Maps has a new feature that I wanted to share, and I'm kind of excited about it because I've used a couple of different apps for this piece of functionality that they now have embedded in Google Maps, and that's my kind of mapping software of choice. But they have something called Share Location. I've mentioned Glimpse before, which is kind of a third party, and it runs in the background, and it's not too bad. But if I'm already using Google Maps for directions or whatever, I kind of lean toward using functionality that's already in it rather than using a third party. So Share Location, what that provides is the ability to share where you are and where you're headed with whoever you want, for instance. So there's a couple different ways that you can do it. You can share with people that you've already kind of plugged in. So I have Debbie, my wife, as a contact here, and all I have to do is click on her image and then select the slider here to start sharing. I can set it to always share or just share for an hour or whatever. I've got different options of doing that. You can also share to, let me go back here, let me close it down, and because there is a little message. Whoa. Come on, baby. If I go to Share Location, you can add a person here by selecting people who are already in your contact list, or you can send a text message. If I click the text message icon, it puts a little link down in the text message area, and then you can send that to anybody you want. And this link just kind of stays open for, or stays available for, however long you set it once you send the message. So you can set it for an hour or 30 minutes or 2 hours or whatever. They can click on this link. It'll open up Google Maps for them. It's not a Google Maps URL, but it's maps.app.goo.gl. That'll open up on their phone or their computer, and then they can see exactly where you are. So if you're trying to meet up with somebody or trying to let somebody know, hey, you're on your way home or you're lost or whatever, this is a great addition to Google Maps. I saw a feature in their video that said once you start driving directions, you can send your route, which would give an estimated time that you'd arrive at whatever your destination is. I don't see that in the iOS app, which is what I'm showing here. I'm thinking that that might be in the Android app itself. So your mileage may vary depending on what version of the app you have. But I thought that was a nice addition. I was kind of curious that it wasn't there before, but you do have that share location functionality now that you didn't have just last month. There's an article I'll link to in the show notes as well that talks a little bit about how it all works and what you can and can't do. There's a bunch of use cases for it, but it's free, comes along with Google Maps, and I think most people are Google Maps people. Even iOS people, I think, have not kind of gravitated toward the Maps function that is in iOS. I just found it to be fairly inconsistent. I like Google Maps a lot better. So,
very nice. I'm letting my husband know that I'm in the room next door to him. So, pretty cool stuff.
That's right. But it with kids and whatever, I think there's a lot of uses for it.
Definitely. Good thing to know.
Let's move on. We've got a little bit of community feedback we'd like to share.
We do. I should open up the notes associated with that. Heard recently from missionary Mike Hartman. Hi, Mike. He's down in Mexico with his lovely wife, Rachel, and family. And he says he follows Mobile Ministry Forum. It's a website at mobileministryforum.org. And I can actually share my screen and show you that. It is a Christian website, but put together by a group of people, not specific to any one denomination or anything, but just people, kind of a think tank group that looks at using mobile for outreach purposes. And they recently came out with an 84-page document entitled Social Media Ministry Made Easy. So if you visit their website, there's a link right here just below the home image, or we'll put the link in the show notes as well. It's a PDF document, and it's got Creative Commons licensing, so you're welcome to share it as long as you give them attribution. Looks like it would be a great read for anyone kind of anywhere on this spectrum. Mike himself is extremely involved in using social media and ministry, and it has some very useful tips, he said, from his perspective. In particular, he pointed out a story about a guy who used WeChat in East Asia to meet new people and share his faith with them. On the other hand, the document is written for people who are newbies or perhaps even doubtful about getting into social media. So something for everyone, just kind of a good place to start if you're brand new to it, or a good read for tips and tricks and kind of use cases that other people have shared. And, a decent sized document. This isn't fluff. This has got some real weight to it and looks like a really good read. We'll read through it on Wells Tech in the future. I don't know, but.
I just skimmed. I didn't have time to read. It's a pretty long document, but I think they cover a lot of different bases. It's not narrow in scope. It's pretty broad and would cover a lot of use cases for a lot of different people.
Mm-hmm. So thanks for the recommendation, Mike. And if anyone picks it up and does read it, let us know what you think and what things you think would be helpful to our traditional congregations and schools as they look at social media. Then one more mention. This is from Lou Tassa. Lou is a member of St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Bemidji, Minnesota, way up there in the north. And he says he's an elder there as well. And he had an idea about using email and making kind of an engaging email Q&A type thing for members, where the pastor could ask a question and people could select perhaps from multiple choice and get feedback on whether they answered correctly and, you know, that kind of thing. Sounded like an interesting concept. And he was really wanting to know if he should go about reinventing the wheel, you know, or if someone's already done this kind of concept and they could look at examples or whatever. And Martin, I think you replied, I don't think we've ever heard of anyone taking on a project quite of that nature.
Yeah, we've had different subscription models where you're pushing out devotions, those kinds of things, but more interactive is what Lou is talking about. And my suggestion was, well, maybe kind of a two-part thing. You can maybe use MailChimp to do the subscription stuff, but you're going to point them back to maybe a blog post where you can use WordPress and a lot of the plugins that they have available. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they've got a bunch of kind of these FAQ or quiz type plugins that you could build over time and just point people back. And that would also allow them to interact with the blog post itself through the commenting system too. But I'm sure there are people who are doing other things as well. And I think I encourage Lou to kind of use the Wells Tech Google group. And we told them we'd put this on the show as well and see if other people out there kind of have any advice for him, this more interactive quiz-like, you know, almost a catechism-like experience where it's going on via email and kind of an interactive approach. So,
yeah,
cool. Definitely. I love the idea.
The email component seems to have a little bit more of a challenge to it, doing it online like you described. And that actually gave me the thought of a tool that we do have out there on the What About Jesus site.
It's called
Explore the Bible, and it goes through different lessons, and the lessons are pretty fast to read through, has different things we know from God's word, when God says things, what we know. And as you read through it and get to the end of each lesson, then there is a quiz. Yep. Built in there. And when you answer the questions, and I'm not even reading through the questions, but depending on how you answer the questions, once you get to the end of the bank of six questions, it'll tell you whether you got them right or wrong. And it does have that responsive nature to it that gives you feedback on what you answered. So where you were incorrect actually has scored 0 points.
Back to Bible school for you.
Yeah, maybe I should learn to read. But you can see it was incorrect, and then they gave me an explanation in bright blue so that I definitely pay attention. Oh, I got one right here. anyway, so it does have that kind of interactive flavor, but it's not one question at a time or done via email. So I think that's the difference. And yeah, definitely check out the Wells Tech Google group and ask your questions out there, because there's a great audience of people that will chime in and give you feedback.
Yep. Very good. Thanks for the question, Lou. We really appreciate it. I think that's it for community feedback. If you would like to contribute to your question, comment, suggestion, all of the above are welcome. Just go to wellstech.wells.net. Leave a comment there on one of the episodes. Use one of the social networks. We're on almost all of the major ones, including Pinterest. And you can also send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. So join the conversation. We would love to hear your voice. Sally, we do a featured video throughout the summer yet. What did we find for everybody?
Well, this video is a little bit odd, Martin, I must admit, but it does have technology in it. It has ostriches using technology and virtual reality in it. The moral of the story is that you have to try, or, you know, believe in yourself and try things, I think. So I thought it might be good for people to tuck away. Oftentimes when you're starting or ending presentations or whatever it may be, having a little visual to help you break the ice or whatever, this might be a good one to have in your arsenal. I'm not going to give away too much more, except I think you'll get a grin from it and the ostrich's experience with virtual reality.
Very good. Sally, you are at the plate next week. What are you going to be talking about for your ministry resource?
Well, I'm very excited to talk about teaching kids to code, because one of the things that my husband and I enjoy doing is running different robotics type events during the summer. So it's kind of just a side hobby. It's actually Robot Camp Week this week at the Draper household. So we have about 8 students meeting up with us in the evenings at Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School, and we're walking through building MBots and teaching them to code with those and running some cool competitions, bringing their families in for demonstration and stuff. And we're doing it again in a couple of weeks in Comfrey, Minnesota as well. So just a fun time of year, and it's just got us engrossed in all the new technology that's out there to share with them. And I just wanted to kind of share some ideas with folks. Maybe you're looking to add a STEM component to your classroom this year, or you just want to extend your own child's learning or group of children or whatever it may be. So we're going to look at teaching kids to code next week on Wells Tech.
Very cool. So that'll be episode 506. And got a special episode coming up in a few weeks. Sally will be making the journey over across the river once again and joining me in Watertown, Wisconsin, where the Synod Convention will be taking place. It's the last couple days in July and first couple days in August. So I'm looking forward to that as well. We'll plan something special there.
Definitely.
Sally, thanks for joining. Once again, thanks to all of you for your eyes and ears. Appreciate you being here. Even if it's inconsistent every so often is fine. Spread the word, and hopefully we can grow our Wells Tech family. Thanks again for being here, and we'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.